Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and we are excited to be back as we are continuing on into the Goblet of Fire. And with me, as she is every week, the wonderful and spectacular Drea Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Now, how are you this fine day?
I am pretty tired, but yeah. we're okay. We're doing okay.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that as we're recording this, tomorrow is Friday. So, thank God. I know.
Although all day today, I kind of felt like it was Friday. So, it was really disappointing to find out it was only Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'll live. At least it wasn't like Tuesday. So.
Yes. There is nothing worse than it being like Monday and you're like, it's Friday, right? No. Four more days.
Or it being Wednesday and you're like, No, there's two more days.
No good.
Yeah.
We always try to help you get through the week and here on the Nerd Party. You can find us all over the place while we help you do that with all the podcasts that we have. We've got thenerdparty.com, which is a great place to check us out and all the shows that we do. You can find us on iTunes, so you can find Owlpost there. Over on Apple Podcasts, while you're over there, give us a star rating review. Let other people know what you think of the show and help them find it. I was just looking the other day. It's been a while. Owlpost does pretty well, Drea, with the numbers. So I want to thank everybody. I really want to just say this. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening, sharing the show, and giving us your reviews. It means a lot, and you've really helped the show grow by leaps and bounds. So continue giving those star ratings and reviews so that can still happen. You can find us over on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty, so make sure you're following us there. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And as I mentioned, TheNerdParty.com, if you put a slash and a contact after that, you can also send us an email. Choose a show, choose Owlpost, and Drea and I would get that email, and we'd be able to talk to you. So, which we love doing, honestly, with any place that you want to contact us on social media. It's great. So, Drea, we have four champions.
We have four champions.
There's not a ton that happens in this chapter because really it's just the resolution of whether or not Harry's going to actually, compete. Like that's the whole chapter. But I just love Harry, just that kind of blank look, like it wasn't me. I didn't do it.
I didn't do it.
You know, you almost want to, you almost kind of hear that Han Solo, it's not my fault. You know, like I didn't do it. But I love how the way she writes it, that the place is just silent. Like,
yeah.
And how awful that would be. And I do think the one thing the movie gets really well done here is Daniel Radcliffe kind of trying to make himself really small and like, just fall into the background, and Hermione trying to like go, you know, like that's exactly what we get here. Is Harry just, he doesn't get it, and Dumbledore calls his name again, and he gets shuffled through the door, saying, you know, well, it's okay. Dumbledore's like, go through the door, and like nobody is smiling at Harry. Like Dumbledore's not smiling. McGonagall's not smiling.
In fact, they all kind of look flabbergasted from the description. Like, it's not even like they're mad or angry. They're like shocked. They literally cannot figure out how this happened and are trying to, I think they're trying to kind of read him, and he's not giving them anything because he's kind of got this blank, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening to me look on his face. So
I think that it's interesting. Like, I love that read, what you just said. Like, Harry's not giving them anything. In fact, what I think it is honestly, Harry's not giving them any indication that he did what just happened. Mm-hmm. So now
I think they're like, oh, he put his name in, but he's just like, he's as confused as they are. And they're like, wait, normally I'm a teacher, you know, I can read when a student's lying to me or what their reaction is. Are they excited? Or like, you know, if he had some sort of reaction, they'd be able to be like, oh no, he's really excited. He had to have known this was coming. Or so it's just really, it's a really interesting reaction. It's not what you would expect at all, really.
Well, and you know, he goes into the room with the other three champions, and I really like how they're like, Are you here to, you know, like, give us a message? And he's like, and before he can even really say anything, the rest of the group walks in, Ludo Bagman, Dumbledore, and the rest, and he is just like, Bagman is just ecstatic. Like, he's the only one who thinks, like, this is the greatest thing since, like, individually wrapped, you know, chocolate frogs. Jeez. You know, he just thinks this is great, and I love Flora's like, oh, that is a very funny joke, you know, like, joke, oh no, it's not a joke, like, he's just, and I just love
the, I love that Flora's kind of a biatch about this, like, she is super her and Madame Maxime are like super pissy about this. I mean, you get it, it's a much more real reaction than the movie when you think about it. But, like, man, like, you know, she's already kind of had an attitude towards him at the table. And now, like, there's even more of an attitude. You're just getting, like, Fleur diva attitude all day long.
Oh, yeah.
It's just divalicious.
And, yes, yes. And Madame Maxine is kind of the same thing. You know, she says this little boy, you know, like, he's going to compete. And Harry just, I mean, he's still in shock. But somebody just called him a little boy, and that did not make him happy inside. And so, but I love that what's fascinating to me is watching Harry in this situation keep his composure. He doesn't do anything rash. He doesn't say anything untowards towards anyone. He doesn't act in any way other than he's just as confused as everybody else. And therefore, I think Harry shows some real wisdom here. He doesn't do much, you know?
I read it differently. I didn't read it as wisdom. I more read it as the kid who doesn't even know what to do or mm-hmm. say, right? Yeah. Like, he is staunchly defending the fact that he did not do this. But I almost feel like it's more he's so caught off guard and out of his element that even if he wanted to throw a fit and act out, I don't know that he would know how in the circumstances. Like,
that's a good point, yeah.
Like, he's just still kind of reeling mm-hmm. that, you know, we've all had those things happen where you're like, man, looking back, I wish I had said or done XYZ. I feel it's a little bit like that. Like, he's still so caught off guard and doesn't understand the impact of what's happening to him yet. He's so confused, he can't say anything.
Yes.
And that's kind of how I read the situation, because he doesn't really kind of grasp it until the very end of the chapter. And that's when he, like, kind of snaps, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah. I guess it's kind of like retroactive wisdom, like, when you look at it now. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, he doesn't even know what to say. And then not only is Madame Maxine pouring it on, but then Snape starts in about how this is nobody's fault but Harry
but
Potter.
Harry's.
And it just, like, you just, I really like that Dumbledore steps in and says firmly, thank you, Severus. And you get the feeling like it's like one of those, shut your pie hole, you know?
Well, and you get that impression too, because then she writes it as Snape. It's almost like he, like, disappears through mm-hmm. the curtains. Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't even express any sort of, like, towards Dumbledore. He just sort of, like, disappears because he knows he's, like, pissed him mm-hmm. off, you know? And I really like, though, how Dumbledore sort of handles it almost like he takes responsibility for it, right? He knows he's the adult. If there's any sort of, like, magical fault here, he's taking ownership as his own, right? Because they're talking about, well, you know, you could have written such a poor age line that even a fourth year could outdo it, right? Like, that's got to be your fault. And he's like, you know what? If that was the problem, I'll totally take that responsibility. You know, he doesn't, like, they're trying to kind of play the blame game, and he's like, I'm not going to engage with you. I'm just going to say sure, and let's move on and see what we can do. I just love how he handles it with such, I just, like, poise. He's just so tactful.
Well, and I think that is the main difference here between what we get in the movie and what we get in the book. And I love Dumbledore so much more in the book, is that Dumbledore is not frazzled by these things. Let me give you a little hint for the future. Dumbledore has so much more of an idea of what's going on than we ever get here, right? And I think that's what, but there's something that Dumbledore gives us here, right? And the way that he reacts that lets you in on
a little insight that maybe we don't have already. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So I think she hints at that, and I definitely love his very calm. Harry, did you put your name into the Goblet of Fire? No. Did you ask another student to do that was older? No. And Harry's very emphatic about that. And of course, you know, everybody's like, oh, he's lying. And, you know, Snape is shaking his head. And she even writes, his lip is curling, you know, like you can just see it. And then at that moment, you know, that's where Madame Maxime jumps in and is like, oh, well, we know it was a bad age line. And McGonagall goes berserk.
she goes just, mama bear on everyone.
Oh, my gosh. It's awesome. Well, and I wanted to ask you, we know from, and this is not spoilers for these books, right? Okay, because she never gives spoilers. She never gives McGonagall's story here in the books. So that's not a spoiler.
Right, it's all conjecture and outside of the series.
Right, yeah. It's outside of the series. She wrote some stories, not really stories, but she wrote a collection of, I guess it could be stories.
It's on like Pottermore or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's just out there within it's in the like realm in the universe, but it's not part of the storyline at all.
That McGonagall had been married. She had a wonderful husband. He died, and she's never gotten remarried and has dedicated herself to the school and to Hogwarts. And you can tell here she has a very close relationship with Dumbledore. Like, they're, you know, you can just see that.
To clarify, they have a close mentorship relationship. Yes. They have like a brother and sister, mentor mentee relationship.
Right.
Because of other things outside of the scope of the story about Dumbledore as well, there's no like.
But I would say, as to this point in the story, if you were just reading it for the first time, you might think that there's maybe a little.
A little something there.
Yeah, a little something. It's
not
which
important, though.
No, it's not. But what it really does come off is that she has. I think, more than anything else, she has ultimate respect for Dumbledore and basically considers him to be the best witch of the age. There's nobody who's going to... I mean, if he's not going to mess up an age line. He's Dumbledore. Yeah.
She was pissed. The insinuation of that to her was just like... It was like an insult on the entire school. Like, it's like they're challenging the headmaster of the school, challenging the school's integrity. Like, it's just... I mean, it was like the biggest insult they almost could have thrown. Mm-hmm. And Karkaroff kind of gets in on it too, less about placing blame, but more upset that it's unfair to the other schools that Hogwarts has two champions, and that, you know, he doesn't want to compete, and, you know, kind of gets shut down there by Mad-Eye, whose name we find out is Alistair.
Yes, I did love that. I love Harry's, like... Oh, I guess his name wouldn't really be Mad-Eye, because, yeah.
I guess he has a real first name.
It doesn't make sense for that to be the case. But, no, absolutely. You know, Alistair comes out and says, the only real explanation here is that somebody Confundus charmed the Goblet of Fire. And so it would have had to be somebody who is a very powerful wizard to do that. There's no way a fourth year would have been able to do that. And everybody's looking at him like, well, you put a lot of thought into this. And he's like, well, it was my job to you know, think as dark wizards
do. Dark wizards once did. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and, you know, I love the explanation we get here. Like, we kind of get that explanation in the movie, right? Like, oh, someone else had to put his name in, and they only mean him ill will is kind of the intention, right? They even say at some point, the only reason anyone would do this in order to kill him, right? Like, all sunshine and rainbow stuff, guys. Super, super upbeat. But I do like that in the chapter, we get even more of an explanation on how it logistically could have happened. You know, a wizard or a witch would have had to have put a Confundus charm on the Goblet of Fire, like you said, but they also would have had to have confused it to have an extra house entered that doesn't exist, and Harry had to be the only person entered into that house so they could guarantee that he was selected. And I was like, that is very specific. And now I understand how his name came out of the Goblet of Fire.
Yes. Well, and I think, again, it's just one of the places where I think, like, the book does such a better job of setting up the mystery here of how in the world does Harry's name get into the Goblet of Fire?
And out of.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, like you just said, you know, he even says that they probably put his name in under a fourth school. And of course, he's the only one. So it for sure would have been, you know, he would have been chosen. Which I wonder now if maybe it was Ilvermory, you know?
Oh, the
yeah,
US school.
Because it's a different, it has to be a different school than Hogwarts. But so anyway, I just wonder.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could have just confused it in thinking that something, whatever made up name mm-hmm. was another house or something, but or another school. But yeah, I found the explanation was satisfying and I liked that. I had forgotten that we don't really get that explanation in the movie and that you're just sort of expected to believe that the cup randomly throws out Harry's name. But that's not the case.
Well, and we also learn a lot more about the cup too. The yeah. fact that, you know, because Karkaroff and Madame Maxine are like, well, let us put in more people so we can choose more.
And everyone gets two.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So everybody gets two and they're like, well, you know, the cup will not light now until the next, you know,
tournament.
And they're like, well, we won't be a part of that tournament. You know, like it's just this massive, nasty thing that has started. And, you know, one of the things I have to say is the way that she writes this is so well done in the sense of the way that different governments work together.
It's very political here. It's very much based on the school and their school pride, and it's a lot more like a government or a sporting event versus in the movie where you kind of get it as almost individuals, right? Like they just brought these individuals together. You also kind of find out that everyone who was brought from the schools was kind of eligible to compete, which also is not true in the movie and is also not explained in the movie. You know, so it's just, it's interesting. You get much more of the political dynamics and learn a little bit more about how all of that interchanges. And you also learn that there was a whole negotiation to even get this happening in the first place, right? Like, oh, we went through all this time and effort and negotiations to get this scheduled. You can't back out now. You know, you learn just a little bit more background on the tournament itself, which was pretty interesting too.
Well, and what I also kind of think is interesting as well is they're all wrapping up, you know, it's all decided. This is the way it's going to be. It's a magical contract. Nobody can back out. Everybody's got to be in. This is just the way it is. You know, got to suck it up. You know, Bagman is all excited. He's talking about how he's not going back to work. He's staying at Hogwarts. You know, this is where the real action is. And I just love how Mr. Crouch, they're like, do you want to stay? He's like, oh, no, I need to get back to the office. You know, I left Weaselbee or
no,
Weatherbee,
I left Weatherbee
in charge. You know, he's a little overenthusiastic and just really, I just love the dig at Percy there. It's great.
Well, and that probably is the moment where I sort of think it clicked for me that Harry really doesn't understand or know what's going on because he didn't capitalize on that. You didn't get, oh, and Harry smirked, or like you literally didn't get him even responding to that, which if he kind of had some idea, you'd think he'd still like kind of chuckle to himself or you know, he would do something where he'd be like, oh, I have to remember to tell Ron. Like there would have been some component of that being comical for him, and it wasn't. He just sort of was, it almost is like he was dazed and he just kept going.
And I think it's fascinating too, you know, after everybody's leaving, the boys, Cedric and Harry are being sent back to their common rooms, and Cedric's like, man, how did you get your name in? And Harry's like, I didn't. I was telling the truth. I didn't
I'm
put it in
I'm telling you
there.
I don't know.
And Cedric's like, okay. Uh-huh. And Harry's just like, all right, well, I'll see you then, because he's like, you don't believe me. So,
I can tell you, if that was me, I'd be so angry that nobody believed me. I would be like, seriously, I did not do it.
Well, and it's a real frustration for him. And it's also a real frustration for him because, you know, he gets back to the common room and everybody wants to party, right? And he doesn't want this at all. Like, he's not in the mood to party about this because this is not a party to him. But everybody in Gryffindor thinks it's great. You know, like, Angelina is coming up, is like, at least we've got a Gryffindor, you know, it's so awesome, it's so great, you know, and he's just not having it. And he finally gets the opportunity to get to bed And he finally sees Ron, and Ron is being quite cold towards him, talking about how, like, you know, you could tell me the truth, you know, I wish you would let me know. And he's trying to tell Ron, look, I didn't do it. I didn't, you know, and Ron is not believing him. And it's, by the end of the chapter, it's hurting Harry so much because the one person he thought would believe him and be on his side is not. And now he feels like he pretty much has nobody.
Well, and it sort of triggered both of them, right? It sort of triggered Harry in that he hates the fame and everything that comes with it. And now he's kind of thrust back in that spotlight. And he doesn't want that. And he doesn't understand why no one believes him that he doesn't want that. You know, like, right. This is his worst nightmare right now. Not the dying part, but the being in the spotlight mm-hmm. part. He just wants to be normal. And Ron wants the opposite. Ron wants to be famous. He wants the spotlight. You know, he talked at the early beginning of this book about how amazing it would be to be a world famous Quidditch player. And now all of a sudden his best friend is entered in this tournament with all this fame and glory and this potentially large prize. And like, didn't tell him. And they both are feeling like their worst nightmares right now. And because they're 14, they can't look past it to support each other. And I think it's a great depiction of just growing up and the growing pains and the learning to look past those things and process them. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to their relationship in the next couple chapters, because if it's anything like the movies, we're in for a real fun teenage angsty ride.
Yeah, it is an interesting place to be. You know, and I would say that I think, you know, more, you know, Ron doesn't have a reason not to believe what Harry's saying right now, other than he's jealousy. Yeah. And I think it's interesting what you said too. Like, it is fascinating to me that, you know, for Harry, there were fleeting dreams that they talk about in the chapter of him thinking about, oh, you know, winning the thing and the cup, and you know, then, you know, Cho Chang thinking he's awesome, but it didn't matter. He couldn't enter, so it was just like those things that any, you know, 14-year-old boy at this point would kind of think about for a second and then just let go of. So this is not something that he wanted.
It's not something that he would go out of his way to maliciously obtain. Mm-hmm. Like, he wouldn't do that. And if he did, he would absolutely need Ron's help. Like, yep. Ron would absolutely know. So it's just crazy for him to even think that, like, you know, Ron's his person. It's his brother, in essence. Like, he knows he would tell Ron. And for Ron to not believe him is like, you know, but it's one of those moments where Harry doesn't understand it's really not about him. It's about Ron. And it's about Ron not just feeling what he's feeling and is jealous and feeling betrayed, but it actually has nothing to do with Harry. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how this unfolds. And we haven't really gotten Hermione's reaction either, because she also was not down in the common room. She was also missing. We can assume mm-hmm. she's up in the girls' dormitory. But, you know, we haven't really figured out what that is going to be like for that reaction either.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the chapter just leaves us kind of in a, you know, quagmire of emotion.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And I'm right there with you. It's going to be really interesting and really fun to be able to talk about how this plays out in the next few chapters as we continue on. And we start to get to the real meat of this book is, you know, the tournament actually starts. You know, we actually get to this Triwizard tournament. So I'm really excited to do that. So
everyone get your emo clothes and your black eyeliner and your hair in front of your eyes all ready to go for next time, guys.
Well, while people are trying to do that, Drea, where can they find you online if they want to talk to you about some Harry Potter or, you know, anything else they've got going on they would like to bounce off you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick. Or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations as we talk about Star Wars each and every week, John Mills and I. It's such a blast. I hope you'll check it out. Honestly, it's just two guys kind of celebrating the saga each and every week. So if you love Star Wars, this is the place for you. You can find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I'm also doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show over there, which is so much fun as we talk about all the fandoms we love. We don't try to, you know, just keep it into one or something. No, we try to cram everything we can in. And then last but not least, talking about films through the lens of faith on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney. But we want to say thank you so much for checking your Owlpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.